Robert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mueller is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mueller, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mueller Program. The leading human rights institution in Europe is known as the Council of Europe, and its parliament voted overwhelmingly last week to endorse a resolution declaring that creationism, the belief in the divine creation of the universe, is a threat to human rights. I'm going to read to you later in this program from the resolution. You're going to hear the Council of Europe, an official body made up of all the major European states, a body whose responsibility is supposedly to protect human rights, claim that creationism is a threat not only to human rights, but to democracy, to the rule of science, to human progress, and that those behind it are actually not just so much concerned about what they would call the religious aspect of divine creation, but rather are trying to establish a theocracy. I wrote an article about it, published at albertmueller.com just overnight, and I started by saying this: as if the world needed another crazy development, the Council of Europe declared creationism to be a threat to human rights. It's almost hard to believe this isn't some kind of parody. It's hard to believe this isn't some kind of farcical thing that's going to be published in some kind of, satire magazine, but it's true. It is true. The Council of Europe has declared creationism to be a threat to human rights. We're going to be talking about it on the program today, and what we're really going to be talking about is what this demonstrates about the fact that a secular society has to have the creation myth of evolutionary theory in order to maintain its worldview. That's what this is really about, the tenacity of the secular culture to hold on to Darwinian evolution, because without it, it's got to deal with things no secular culture wants to deal with. Let's put it this way. If evolution didn't produce the world and all there is and living creatures and all the rest, then who did? That's the question the secular culture doesn't want to confront. We're going to talk about it today on the Albert Mueller Program. To join the discussion, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. First, to review some issues in the news, Hillary Clinton has pulled ahead for the first time in Iowa, which is beginning to make her run for the Democratic presidential nomination something like inevitable. Now, in politics, nothing is inevitable. And so even as we don't talk about this too much at this stage in the presidential campaign, it is interesting to note that on the Democratic side, in terms of fundraising, in terms of momentum, the ground game, all the rest, the senator from New York is really pulling ahead. But that's not why she has caught my attention today. She's caught my attention because of a statement she made recorded in the New York Times in which she says that if elected president, she would shield science from politics. Now, obviously, there's a background to that story, but let's listen to what she had to say here. Patrick Healy and Cornelia Dean, reporting to the New York Times, wrote this. In a stinging critique of Bush administration science policy, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton of New York said yesterday that if she were elected president, she would require agency directors to show they were protecting science and science research from political pressure, and that she would lift federal limits on stem cell research. Her remarks came at the Carnegie Institution of Washington. They amounted to a spirited attack on President Bush for waging what she called a war on science that has allowed political appointees to shape and in some cases distort science-based federal reports. I believe in evolution, she said, and I am shocked at some of the things that people in public life have been saying. I believe that our founders had faith in reason, and they also had faith in God, and one of our gifts from God is the ability to reason. I am grateful that I have the ability to look at dinosaur bones and draw my own conclusions, adding that antibiotic-resistant bacteria is evidence that evolution is going on as we speak. Now, that's very, very interesting. There's really a whole lot there. When you talk about the worldview implications of a presidential race, a lot of it really comes into focus with this one news story. Didn't get a lot of attention. A lot of newspapers didn't cover it at all. It wasn't front-page news in a lot of places because much of the media is concerned with nothing more than who's ahead where, who's leading in which poll, who's raising more money than someone else. The worldview implications are far more interesting to me. I want to know what they're thinking and how their thoughts beginning to come out in what takes place in moments guarded and unguarded. Now, the senator from New York, Senator Clinton, is a very controlled candidate. She doesn't speak off the cuff. She doesn't speak frivolously. She is very careful and deliberate in what she says. Therefore, when she decides to give a speech at the Carnegie Institution in Washington, in which she attacks this kind of science, she says, and believes that she could shield science from politics, and when she goes on to affirm evolution, well, that's pretty much what we're going to be talking about, the Council of Europe, she's obviously trying to make a point. What is that point? Well, she's making a point that she's going to side with science that's more aggressive on issues like human embryonic stem cell research. No great surprise there. President Bush, and I believe this is one of the most courageous aspects of his leadership, has held the line for human dignity by refusing to expand federal research funding that would lead to the destruction of human embryos. Now, there is no limitation on this. In other words, the only limitation here is financial. It's not a legal limitation. He didn't say that research couldn't take place elsewhere. Congress has passed no such law. But it does have to do with federal funding. But the implication that Senator Clinton is making here is that you could have science without politics, that you could have the funding of science without politics. Let's be really honest here. You can't have anything related to funding from Washington without politics. It's not a question of whether science is political. Science has always been political. It's political in terms of who gets what funding. It's political in terms of which idea is put forward. It's political in terms of who gets the grant, who gets the appointment, who gets the nomination. It's always political. So the question isn't whether science is going to be political. It's going to be what politics will control or drive or influence the science. So I just want to strip away the illusion that Senator Clinton, and let's just assume she means to be completely honest here. I want to strip away the illusion that she could, if president, shield science from politics. The very fact that she's talking about it means it's political. She's talking about decisions she would make as president of the United States, and she's made very clear that she would lift federal limits on stem cell research. In other words, she's going to decide that the human embryo is simply an appropriate target for scientific research, even when it leads to destruction. That's the bottom line. That's where it is. Now, I do have to wonder, though, where the evolution stuff entered in here. I just have to wonder, where did that come from? Let me read to you the quote again, and let me give you the context here. Just to be completely fair, the New York Times reporter said, in the telephone interview after the speech, Mrs. Clinton also tacitly criticized opponents of evolution. Some of the 2008 Republican presidential candidates have said flatly they do not believe in evolution, while other Republican contenders have said they support teaching evolution, intelligent design, and creationist ideas. Quote, I believe in evolution, and I am shocked at some of the things that people in public life have been saying. This is what Mrs. Clinton said, quoting, I believe that our founders had faith in reason, and they also had faith in God, and one of our gifts in God is the ability to reason. I'm grateful that I have the ability to look at dinosaur bones and draw my own conclusions. Now, that's just very interesting, because I'm not sure that any of us is able to look at dinosaur bones and draw many other conclusions other than that there once were dinosaurs. You know, in other words, I find that an interesting piece of political rhetoric, but what conclusions did she draw? That'd be very interesting. She says she's glad she can draw her own conclusions, and evidently what she draws is evolution. She says, affirming that antibiotic-resistant bacteria is evidence that evolution is going on as we speak. That's not evolution in this sense. That's adaptation. No one argues, no creationist argues with biological adaptation. We understand that fungi learn to live on different hosts. We understand that germs adapt to go around different mutations of development in order to overcome vaccinations and antibiotics. We understand that. That's not evolution. That doesn't explain how you get from primordial nothing to the human being with human consciousness. Well, all that's interesting anyway, and of course there's going to be more coming as we consider the playout of the 2008 presidential race. It is interesting, however, that from Great Britain is coming some very interesting data that marriage, this is the headline, no doubt, in the Guardian, which is the most liberal, the major British newspapers, this is what it says. Marriage is still the best way to play happy, healthy families, says study. It says that in Great Britain, cohabitating couples are the fastest growing family type, an increase of 65% just over the last decade. But it also says that marriage is the most stable of all these arrangements, and it leads to the greatest happiness. Listen to this. The analysis published by the Office for National Statistics says marriage is associated with better health, particularly for men. Women who are or have been married and have children are the healthiest, unless they are lone parents who are significantly more likely to suffer long-term illness. Divorce and separation are also associated with poor health. of children who live with their married parents, 69% of boys and 78% of girls are still in education at the age of 17, compared to 59% of boys and 69% of girls who live with their mother alone or with cohabitating parents. Now, there's really no news there, is there? Well, the news is that even Britain's most liberal newspaper has to come back and say, wait a minute, marriage does make a difference. Even as cohabitation, living together without marriage, has increased 65%, it hasn't led to an increase in happiness. You're healthier and happier, yourselves and your children, when the parents are married. Now there's a newsflash. Back to talk about why the Council of Europe thinks that creationism is a threat to human rights. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. I'm Albert Mohler. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. It's one of those stories which, when you see it, you just have to wonder if it could really be real. But it is real. Major news sources and the official website of the Council of Europe are trumpeting the fact that that organization last week adopted a resolution stating that creationism is a threat to human rights and that it is promoted by, quote, forms of religious extremism. Reuters, one of the major European news sources, reported the council, based in the eastern French city of Strasbourg, oversees human rights standards in member states and enforces decisions of the European Court of Human Rights. The resolution, which passed 48 votes to 25 with three abstentions, is not binding on the Council's 47 member states, but reflects widespread opposition among politicians to teaching creationism in science class. All right. Very helpfully, the Council of Europe has a great website, very useful website, in which they actually post the resolution, which is available for all to see. If you go to my website at albertmohler.com, you'll find my article entitled, Is Creationism a Threat to Human Rights? And just follow the hyperlink directly to the resolution. Let me just read to you something from the resolution. It's absolutely fascinating. I mean, this group is saying that that creationism is a threat to human rights. It's a threat to democracy, and that it inevitably would lead to theocracy. This is what they said. The Parliamentary Assembly is worried about the possible ill effects of the spread of creationist ideas within our education systems and about the consequences for our democracies. If we are not careful, creationism could become a threat to human rights, which are a key concern of the Council of Europe. That sentence is preceded by this. For some people, the creation, as a matter of religious belief, gives a meaning to life. Okay, you know, you look at that and you just have to say, we must have just looked at the future. And in the future, if the secularized culture of Europe is the future we're supposed to be looking at, in that secular future, you've got to tell people that some people once thought creation was important. Hey, this is bizarre. Here you have the Council of Europe starting a resolution by saying that creation, as a matter of religious belief, for some people, gives a meaning to life. Yes, and by the way, gave birth to the European culture and civilization of which the Council of Europe is supposedly the defender. It's an amazing statement. It's almost breathtaking in its audacity. It's amazing because it reflects the fact that they just obviously believe they've got to tell people why the issue's even important. Some people think creation's important, so maybe you should too. And if you're not careful, that's their very words, is if you're not careful, creationism could become a threat to human rights, which are a key concern of the Council of Europe. As I said in my article, someone must be passing out paranoia pills there in Strasbourg, France. Can you just imagine that here you had the leading human rights body of all of Europe assign the task of enforcing the decisions of the Court of Human Rights? The group that's supposed to hold European nations accountable for human rights actually spent its deliberative energies arguing about the danger of creationism. Now, let me read to you a little more from this. This is from the text of their resolution. Creationists question the scientific character of certain items of knowledge and argue that the theory of evolution is only one interpretation among others. They accuse scientists of not providing enough evidence to establish the theory of evolution as scientifically valid. On the contrary, they defend their own statements as scientific. None of this stands up to objective analysis. Now, that's the end quote. But let's just ask the question, well, where's the objective analysis? I mean, you just said in your resolution it won't stand up. Well, where? I mean, you know, provide some evidence. All they do is make assertions. It follows They say that creationists, quote, question the scientific character of certain items of knowledge. You know, you heard that. Then they say, we are witnessing a growth of modes of thought which, the better to impose religious dogma, are attacking the very core of the knowledge that we have patiently built up on nature, evolution, our origins, and our place in the universe. Now, that's truly scary to me. I mean, honestly, here you have the Council of Europe saying that they, and I guess by that they mean by that Western civilization, maybe even just in particular European cultures, have built up a core of knowledge that has been patiently built up on, get this, nature, evolution, our origins, and our place in the universe. Now, explain to me exactly how we are to be encouraged by the fact that evolution supposedly tells us our place in the universe. What would evolution tell us our place in the universe is? Alone? Meaningless? Futureless? Naturalistic? Purely material? Where in the world's hoping that, is the Council of Europe celebrating the fact that whatever knowledge they supposedly built up from evolution is going to tell them their place in the universe? They went on. The Assembly has constantly insisted that science is of fundamental importance. Science has made possible considerable improvements in living and working conditions and is a not insignificant factor in economic, technological, and social development. Now, listen to these words. The theory of evolution has nothing to do with divine revelation, but is built on facts, end quote. Now, that is such a simplistic view of science that it would make the most ardent evolutionist blush. You know, certainly they want to point to evidence for evolution. The evolutionary theorists, the proponents of the theory, are going to try to point to patterns and evidences. But even the most arrogant of them wouldn't say it's simply a matter of facts. Like all of a sudden you open a box and out jump the fact of evolution. Or like you can take all these fossils that Senator Clinton was talking about looking at and somehow just weave them together into the fact of evolution. That is an amazing sentence. But the groups, that is, the Council of Europe's commitment to naturalistic evolution is unconditional. They say this, evolution is not simply a matter of the evolution of humans and populations. Listen to this. Denying it could have serious consequences for the development of our societies. In other words, evolutionary theory is now so important to our secular societies here in Europe that if it is undermined in any way, compromised to any degree, it could impede the progress of our civilization. There's so much more here. I'm going to read to you from the resolution. Our modern world is based on a long history of which the development of science and technology forms an important part. However, the scientific approach is still not well understood, and this is liable to encourage the development of all manner of fundamentalism and extremism. Let me just stop there. When you don't like something, and you're a haughty liberal secularist, you just come up with the very convenient labels, extremism and fundamentalism. Even though they're describing what certainly their parents and grandparents believed. They're talking about the beliefs that gave birth and structure to the very civilization they're supposedly trying to protect. Well, they call it fundamentalism and extremism. They say the total rejection of science is definitely one of the most serious threats to human rights and civic rights. So in other words, if you believe in creation, that's tantamount to, quote, the total rejection of science. You know, they might be interested to know that creationists go to hospitals. That creationists believe in, you know, certain patterns of predictable weather, that creationists believe in the second law of thermodynamics and in the law of gravity. It's just a complete slander to say that if you believe in the divine creation of the universe and you do not buy into the theory of evolution, that that represents the total rejection of science. They go on. The war on the theory of evolution and on its proponents most often originates in forms of religious extremism, there that is again, which are closely allied to extreme right-wing political movements. The creationist movements possess real political power. The fact of the matter, and this has been exposed on several occasions, is that some of the advocates of strict creationism are out to replace democracy by theocracy. There you have it. Let's put all those words in as close a proximity as possible. Fundamentalism, extremism, theocracy. Folks, this isn't an argument. This is a propaganda piece adopted by the Council of Europe in order to situate evolution in the secular mind is absolutely necessary to human progress and human dignity. I want to know what you think about it. The phone number is 877-893-8255. It's Europe Now. How long before something like that here? The phone number 877-893-TALK. This is the Albert Mueller Program. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, you heard for yourself a good bit of the portion of this resolution adopted by the Council of Europe. It truly is breathtaking stuff. Here you have the European body, the highest body related to human rights, declaring that creationism is a threat to human rights, to democracy, and that it is rooted in extremism, fundamentalism, and a desire to establish a theocracy, and that it threatens the forward progress of civilization, no less. Now, I'm doing this program from Kentucky. Here in Kentucky, there's the Creation Museum. It's attracting an incredible amount of attention there in the area around Cincinnati, very close to the Cincinnati airport. It's getting world attention. I've been called by reporters all over the world saying, you know, what does this mean? And it's just absolutely incredible to them. The secular world is shaking at its foundations because their firm belief in evolution just isn't winning the day among the general public. And it's driving them nuts. Even in Europe, that's the amazing thing. Even in secular Europe, it's like they're hearing the hoofbeats of the creationists coming, which, by the way, they acknowledge are not only made up of Christians, but also in their context of Muslims. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. In Louisville, Kentucky, Alan's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Alan.
Dr. Mohler, I agree with the statement that you made. It is creationism is against their society, the society that they have painstakingly built over the last several hundred years with evolutionism, and they see that as a threat, and they want to take creationism or the Christian worldview right out of society because it doesn't go with their plan with society as they have slowly progressed over the last several years.
You know, you're absolutely right, Alan. I want to ask you a follow-up question on that, though. Are you surprised by just the bald, naked candor of what they have to say here?
Not at all. I've watched and tried to keep abreast of worldview and different events around the world, and it just more and more seeing society as a closed-minded society, that all Christians and those who believe in God are extremists, and that they should be rid of society.
You know, another interesting thing about this statement is that clearly they're not fearing a backlash in European countries to this. You know, there might be someone out in the hinterlands, I guess, that might complain, but they obviously do not expect a great political backlash on this because they've offered basically no defense for their argument. Appreciate your call, Alan. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. In Jacksonville, Florida, David's on the line. Go ahead, David.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. What's so interesting is that from a European standpoint, you start looking back at the greatest scientific advantages and things that have been brought back by science are the great theologians. I mean, Sir Isaac Newton, Louis Pasteur, and all these great scientists, they probably wrote more and read more and believed in strong biblical belief, and also they had scientific basis. If you throw out science, you throw out our great scientists. And that's what really blows my mind, that they forget about their history.
You know, good point, David. And I think as you look forward in history, and you mentioned some of the greatest scientific minds, certainly Sir Isaac Newton, no doubt about that, a Christian civilization gave birth. It was itself the cradle of the scientific revolution. H.W. Butterfield, the great historian of science, points out that the Christian worldview dignified the world, the earth, as God's creation in such a way that it was a proper object of study. And furthermore, the Christian scriptures taught that the world is intelligible, that it's orderly because it's created by an orderly God, and it's understandable because God means to be glorified by our observation of this world. Therefore, Butterfield said that's why the modern scientific revolution took place in the Christian civilization as its cradle rather than somewhere else in the world. Now, as you look forward in history, though, you do see a diverging set of paths. One path taken by science because it absorbed into its own methodology, many scientists and much of science, an explicitly naturalistic worldview. And when science did this at first, they said, we're going to bracket the supernatural. We're not going to deny it. We're simply going to bracket it. But that didn't last long until you got to the denial of the supernatural. So now you have evolutionists like Richard Dawkins and Daniel Dennett who are very bold to say, look, you know, people can play at theistic evolution and they can they can try to suggest that there is a reconciliation possible between evolution and Christianity. But at the end of the day, there isn't. And evolution, which they believe to be firmly true, unquestionably true, means that there is no inherent meaning in human life other than the meaning we make. There is no idea more antithetical to Christianity than that. The phone number is 877-893-8255, coast to coast and with listeners around the world. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Okay, folks, this is the way it works. Every single worldview has to answer the question of origins. You can't get around it. It is the question that screams for attention. It demands to be answered. It's the way the ancients used to put it. Why is there something rather than nothing? The very existence of the world, the existence of ourselves, requires some explanation. We want to know, how did this happen? How did we get here? What does it mean? And let's face it, the question of how we got here is the question of what it means. They say that's what you can't get around. Evolution is not merely a scientific theory. It is an implication about the meaning of life. It's either a naturalistic accident or it's something else. And, of course, as Christians, we believe that something else is that it was the purpose of creation of a holy God who created the world for his glory. The meaning and destiny of human life is completely different if you follow those two worldviews out to their conclusion. Now, we understand that. What's interesting is that the Council of Europe also understands that. Now, what's further interesting is that they have decided to take sides in the matter. And the side they have taken is on behalf of naturalistic evolutionary theory. They are absolutely determined to defend it. They see creationism. And in Europe, by the way, there just isn't much creationism to be found. It's not like there are mass movements. In the United States, we've had major federal court cases over creationism. We've had state boards pass laws about creationism, some favoring the inclusion of creationism in public schools. We've had intelligent design emerge as a major movement of cultural conversation here in the United States, but in Britain and in Europe, that's mostly unknown. It's not as if there is some actual, literal, current, credible threat to the reign of evolutionary theory and Darwinian philosophy in the European educational systems. But even without a credible threat, the very fact that there are some people in their midst, and perhaps even more people in their midst, who believe in creation, who believe that evolution is a faulty theory, this is scaring them to death. I want to point out, by the way, that one of the reasons why they may feel insecure in this is simply by numbers. Because the people most committed to evolution are those that are most secular, and they're those that are most European, and they're the ones who are having the least children. So the people having the most children are the people more likely to believe in divine creation. Therefore, they will eventually, let's put it this way, the creationists will outnumber the evolutionists in terms of reproduction if you just look at the cultural left versus the cultural right. The other thing is that Europe really has a very significant problem of the threat of Islam. And there are certainly Islamic forms of creationism, an Islamic form of anti-Darwinianism that is the concern of these people. And so they look at it, they just conflate it, make it one thing, and say anyone that doesn't buy into evolution must be rooted in fundamentalism or extremism and must be wanting to establish a theocracy. That's nonsense, of course. The historical amnesia here is pretty pitiful. There's no acknowledgement that those who created the very European civilization of which they are a part believed in the divine creation of the universe. There's no credence whatsoever given to the fact that vast numbers of people, probably, almost assuredly, the majority of people on the planet right now believe in divine creationism of one sort or another and aren't buying into the Darwinian myth. That reminds me of what a New York Times columnist did a couple years ago in writing, saying, I worry about this country because 70% of Americans, according to some polls, say that they deny the Darwinian model of evolution. That just scares people to death because every worldview has to have a story of beginning. And when that story of beginning comes, when they develop it, it's going to point not only to the beginning, but to the end. Because the end is always found in the beginning. That's the way it is in the scripture. In the beginning, God created heaven and the earth. How is the end of the story in that beginning? It's because if in the beginning, God is Lord and King and sovereign, in the end, he will be King and Lord and sovereign as well. If in the beginning, There's nothing but the primordial ooh and oohs, and there's nothing but time and space and energy, and of course they have no explanation actually for anything got started. Then you're, and how you got something out of nothing, that's still the great philosophical question evolutionary theory can't answer. They nonetheless come up with a system of thought in order to say that you don't have to worry about the fact that there's a God who created you and created all things in orderly fashion and who is in control and who might actually judge you. You just trust that there is a blind scientific process known as evolution, and you simply trust that we know what we're talking about when we say that evolution is the only credible theory. Lots of fascinating stuff that is found in this resolution adopted last week by the Council of Europe. But one of the things that I found most interesting is how they decide to discriminate now among religious faiths and among Christian denominations and styles of theology by saying this, quote, all leading representatives of the main monotheistic religions have adopted a much more moderate attitude, end quote. Now, what they mean by that moderate attitude is that by their claim, all the respectable faiths have found a way to accommodate themselves to Darwinism. Now, that's true of theological liberalism. As a matter of fact, many theological liberals have tried to embrace a form of evolutionary theory within their theological scheme in order to show that even God himself is evolving. The classic heresy of process theology is the fact that God is himself developing. He's evolving along with his creation. So that's certainly true that they have found a way to accommodate themselves to evolutionary theory. I meet people all the time who say, I'm a Christian and I believe that God directed the process of evolution. Well, guess what? If you believe in the process of evolution, it denies that there's any direction. You can't coherently hold to the prevailing model of Darwinian or the prevailing model of evolutionary theory and to the fact that there is a sovereign God who is leading and guiding the process, because the very core of the modern theory is that there is no guidance to the process. Lots of interesting stuff here when you start looking at it. But the bottom line is that the worldview chasm is here exposed. The chasm between a Christian worldview that roots everything, well, in those three words, in the beginning God. That's four words. Those four words, in the beginning God, and in the beginning nothing that became something. You put those two worldviews over against each other, and then you have the great chasm. Now, where is the insecurity here? That's the interesting thing I want to ask. Where is the insecurity here? I want to suggest to you that this article, this resolution, this development is further evidence that the insecurity is on the side of the Darwinians. What they're looking for is the high priesthood of science, and they don't want anyone to question the absolute primacy and infallibility of the priesthood of the scientists. And yet the one thing science can't answer is the most ultimate question of all. Why is there something rather than nothing? And since there is something, what does it mean? Where is it going? How do we understand it? This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation, and this is one of those developments that demands our attention because it shows us that even as we must answer the question, why is there something rather than nothing, everyone else must too. And how you answer that question ends up basically defining everything important about you. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mohler Program. You'll remember that last week I mentioned the great debate held down in Birmingham, Alabama, between British atheist and evolutionist Richard Dawkins, professor at Oxford University, and John Lennox, theologian, scientist, and Christian apologist. In that statement, in that debate, Richard Dawkins said something that really can form kind of the conclusion of our argument here. Just listen to the Oxford scientist, Richard Dawkins, here of this statement.
We now understand essentially how life came into being. We know that we are all cousins of all animals and plants. We know that we're descended from a common ancestor, which might have been something like bacteria. We know the process by which that came about. We don't know the details, but we understand essentially how it came about. There are still gaps in our understanding. We don't understand how the cosmos came into existence in the first place. But we're working on that.
Well, he's working on that, so we can be reassured of that. But in the meantime, he does tell us what he's absolutely sure of. What we now know, he said, we now know that we're all cousins, all of us, listeners. And that in likelihood, we actually emerged from some common ancestor, probably a bacterium. So we are all the grandchildren of a bacterium, united in our cousinly relationships. And so supposedly, says Richard Dawkins, we already know that. But what we don't know is how the cosmos came about in the first place. And then, I guess with a touch of arrogance iced with humility, he says, but we're working on that. Okay. We'll wait. Just remember, that's a question that science can't answer. By its very definition, science can't answer it. It's not observable. It's not testable. But beyond that, it's also just beyond the limits of science in terms of its investigative and intellectual reach. Science is an intellectual tool. It's a discipline of learning. It's a specific way of knowing. And we should be thankful that science has given us many good things. I'll agree with the Council of Europe on that point. We should be very thankful for many of the good things that science has given us. I am thankful for antibiotics and anesthesia. I'm thankful for air conditioning and air travel. But I'm not thankful for the fact that some people have observed all these things and believe that they therefore can reason back to the fact that the entire cosmos is nothing more than a giant accident produced by the blind process of Darwinian evolution. The Council of Europe thinks that creationism is a threat to human rights, that it's a threat to democracy, that it's rooted in extremism and fundamentalism and inevitably will lead to theocracy. Whenever you hear those words, watch carefully, because the argument is about to break down. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.